she can have that one because he's not going to be wearing it anytime soon.
Right.
Although Bobby Mack, I think, may... We have to explain it to Bobby Mack of what's going on.
Yeah, so we had Wendell in here in the 4 p.m. hour.
Very good.
Yeah, Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, joining us in studio. And somehow he was convinced to be a part of this circus because he handed out jerseys to everybody. And I had the C on my jersey, so it was a big moment for me. And O had an A, Noodles had an A, but O's got a big gripe because Al's brother got an A, the Grappler got an A, Mullen got an A.
Everybody got an A.
Yeah. So if everyone has an A,
it's kind of diminished.
It's not worth that much.
That's what O feels, like it's diminished.
And rightfully so.
It's been watered down. That's what he feels. Like the captain, fine, you can live with that. But when everyone gets an A, it's almost like a participation
badge. He should derail it and just cut the A off.
That might be the move. Yeah. Well, Wendell was telling us a story that back in the late 80s to early 90s, before they anointed a
before
new captain.
Rob Ramage took over,
right.
He said there was eight of them that had A's.
And they just rotated, and he said it was like Velcro. So if you had a bad game, one of the boys would go up and goof on you and rip the A off your jersey and say...
Now there's rules against that, and I can't have that many.
You can't have that many, but I have seen in preseason where if, like, there's a number... I don't know, 64 or something, that name bar has Velcro on it, and they just stick it on there.
Oh, they love doing that.
If you're a guy who's designated pretty much going to be in the minors or going back to junior, you're lucky if you have your name bar.
Well, they basically do that at the draft, right? Mm-hmm. Like at the draft, they got a bunch of jerseys, but they don't know exactly who they're going to pick.
No, it's all Velcro.
And it's just right on there and going right up on stage.
Unless you're first overall.
First overall.
I would think Jack Hughes, his jersey didn't have Velcro on it.
Yeah. Although I think he's freaking out right now.
I was just going to say, here's a guy. I don't know the kid, Bob. I'm sure you've crossed paths with him. But to me, he carries himself like a first overall. And in the preseason, it was dancing around, heroic. And I think the league's like, oh. It's a little tougher than I thought it was going to be. Now, he hit a post last night, and he's all around.
He's pointless, though.
He is pointless, but I think he's realizing, this is the best league in the world.
And it doesn't help that he's not insulated because everything in Jersey right now, I mean, Taylor Hall's not playing well.
Right, right.
Now, he sure got an injury, and he's day-to-day. You know, the goaltending hasn't been good. The D hasn't been good. The top line's not scoring. So their power play hasn't been good. Their penalty killing hasn't been good. So, like, of the six games they've played, they easily could have had wins in three of them. I mean, they were leading Florida 4-1 yesterday. They were leading the Jets 4-0 or 4-1.
Yeah, it was 4-0.
And 4-0. And so they've had two meltdowns in those games. So if there was maybe a little more insulation around him, it wouldn't be as bad. But I guess the other argument would be it's not just him.
it's PK, everybody. It's everyone. Yeah.
It's everybody. So
yeah, they're not off to a good start. I mean, that is putting it lightly.
And we knew going into the year that like a guy like Kaapo Kakko, who just got his first goal, by the way, you know, he's more physically mature. He's more ready to play in the NHL now than Hughes is. But when we saw the preseason, we thought, oh, you know, what doesn't matter? These kids, they figure it out.
Yeah.
They always figure it out. And you know what? Maybe he'll figure this out too, even though he's not the most physically mature kid in the world. Still a pretty special talent.
I know it's way too early, but would you get a little sense that maybe if New Jersey continues to head down this path, there's a couple other teams where maybe expectations are a lot higher than what the team is achieving. Is it too early to be hot seat and coaches, or is it?
It is for me in Jersey, and I mean, you know, Gabby Boudreaux is getting a little bit of that in Minnesota before they won. But Pierre LeBrun did a story in The Athletic today on and just talked about it on Insider Trading about how Billy Guerin's not pushing any panic buttons. He's a new GM. He's going to let this play out, see what he's got. Both and Boudreaux's in the last year of his coaching contract. He's got 2 years left after this. In a consulting role or whatever with the team. Now, he'll obviously want to try to parlay that into staying behind the bench, but, you know, there's an easy out there at the end of the year if Guerin wants to bring in his own guy.
And, so
we'll see what happens there. So that one's been getting a lot of play. Dallas has been getting a lot of play. And I don't think that there's anybody ready to push any panic buttons in Dallas just yet, at least not on the coaching front or the general manager front. And I just talked on Insider Trading. I don't think Ray Shiro is about to punt John Hines. I think he's looking at his goaltending. He's looking at his special teams. He's looking at a lot of, we said it,
yeah,
from top to bottom, they've got a lot of issues, and they easily could have had, you know, they had two loser points, they easily could have had two or three wins and been 500, so it's way too early, yeah, for that coaching stuff, and that's just a function of the modern day NHL, social media, and the need for everybody to have talking points.
Yeah, exactly.
When a team is off to a really bad start.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider in studio. Is this a tank-worthy draft? Top two or three picks? Could you see some teams say, you know what, we don't have a problem with losing some games here?
I think it's always a tank-worthy draft. I mean, if you're predisposed, excuse me.
Like McDavid was to the extreme, though.
Oh, to the extreme. There's a, yeah, like...
Generation.
Yeah, but you had Buffalo being like,
Alexi Lafreniere. Alexi Lafreniere is a really good player, and he's ripping it up in the Quebec League right now, playing fantastic. And Quinton Byfield, 6'4", 215 pounds, you know, amazing, you know, speed and skill for a man that big. But, I mean, it's not Connor McDavid. And so, you know, you get a nice reward. And keep in mind, too, tank-worthy now means you've only got a 20% chance at the first overall pick.
Right.
And you're not even guaranteed the second or the third pick.
Right.
Because of the way the lottery's structured. So it's probably not anybody sitting there saying, oh, we got to get this guy.
Has people compared this draft? Like, you know, I was talking to a scout the other day in the media lounge at the Tampa-Ottawa game, saying that the depth of this potential draft reminds him. I mean, 03 is known as one of the best, right, correct?
Yeah.
Is there at least glimpses of something that type of depth?
I think it's too soon on that front, but they really like the high-end guys here, you know, the two Swedes,
yeah,
Holtz and Raymond. The Perfetti kid in Saginaw, we saw him in the summer, elite goal scorer, and he had 30 goals last year as a 16-year-old in the O. He scored the other night. That was his first goal not into an empty net. I think he's got two goals now, one of them into an empty net. He's off to a bit of a slow start. But you've got another European kid, a German, that we talked about on Insider Trading last week. Darren Dreger talked about him, Tim Stutzel.
Yeah.
And he's challenging Raymond and Holtz, the two Swedes, as maybe a top European guy. You've got the franchise goalie out of Russia, Askarov. Yes. So the top 6, 7, 8, 9 guys is really good. The scouts are excited about that group. I think it's too early to say how deep it runs after that.
Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider in studio. Leafs Wild tonight on TSN 4. And Mitch Marner's in the spotlight, even though he's put up points. I think he's got
6 points
in 6 games. So he's on base.
And he's playing a ton of minutes.
A ton of minutes. Killing penalties, first power play, which would be expected. But 5-on-5, he's getting a lot of minutes. But you've lived here your whole life. You're familiar with the market. You compound the way he's playing, which I don't think he's playing well, even with the minutes and the points. 5-on-5, I do not think he's been effective.
No.
And the contract.
Not as dynamic as he normally is.
Right. You know he's got more to give. And eventually he will get there. But this is where, you know, a Toronto kid lives in Toronto during the summer. He can say he was up in Muskoka and offline all he wants. I don't believe that. Do you think it could be the psychology that could be factoring?
I just think that whole first line is just not in sync. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tavares is, you know,
he's right there too with Marner.
He's in the same boat. He's in the same boat, and you know, so you know, some people would say, "Oh, Marner is off to a slow start because of the contract and everything that went with it," or that Tavares is off to a slow start because he's got the captaincy, or they're both off to a slow start because Hyman's out and people didn't appreciate Hyman. Of those three, I would think the latter might be the most true, just in terms of the way the line's constructed. Right. Kapanen's really grinding the gears, hasn't played particularly well. You know, and one of the things that I'm curious about, and I'm not holding my breath, but with that line not being in sync, and Mikheyev playing as well as he's played on that line with Kerfoot and Moore on the third line, I've just wondered, would Mike Babcock even consider the idea of bumping Mikheyev up to the Tavares Marner line, because he more duplicates the kind of game that Hyman is. He's not purely as heavy, but he's a big puck protection guy down low, and slip Kapanen back down the lineup a little bit. Now the risk you run is the third line's been on fire and it's been great. So now you might be screwing up your third line. You might not get the results with Mikheyev on the Tavares Marner line. And so now you've screwed up two lines instead of one of them just being screwed up.
crazy thought, but I'm watching Tampa the other night. So I watch them against the Leafs, and then I do the Ottawa game. Stamkos, Point, and Kucherov.
All loaded up.
But would Babs even think, like, this is out of the... But why not throw Matthews, Tavares, and Marner? Like, why not give a different look of three top players going over the boards for 20 minutes or 18 to 20 minutes? Like, there's still enough depth there, and I know it. But when Point came back that first night, I'm thinking, that's the best line in hockey right there in Tampa with Stamkos, Kucherov.
Yeah.
Now, Stamkos can play center, and so can Point. But, like... I don't know. Would it not scare a team?
Well, how about try it during the game?
That's what I'm saying.
But maybe in the game. But the problem they would say is that they don't want to play Nylander at center,
right?
On the second line, and if you move Matthews up to that top spot, now you don't have a second line center unless you put Nylander in there, or unless you move Kerfoot up and
right. Like,
and I think it creates too much of a ripple effect. But
it could. But
salary cap line.
But I'm just
$33 million on one line.
All I'm saying is that if I'm an opposing player, I'm looking at the whiteboard. I went in the other day in, you know, Ottawa's dressing room. It had Tampa's lineup there. Now Cirelli's a really good player.
Yeah, he is.
Really.
And that's why Tampa doesn't feel like loading Point and Stamkos on the same line is going to disadvantage them,
right?
Because Cirelli can now play second line center in the National Hockey League, and Tyler Johnson, as he's gotten older, who used to be the prototypical second line center,
right, now
can now slide down to number three. So they've got strength down the middle. I think the Leaf argument would be if we move Matthews to the wing with those guys, that we don't have strength down the middle because now we're moving Nylander there and we don't like Nylander at center.
Which is fair, but I just... Again, from an optic standpoint.
But how about not even the whiteboard? Like, again, during the game, you're like, boys, let's go.
But
I'm going to mix in another shift for Matthews.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you can get...
You can
double shift a player if they can handle it. Auston Matthews can handle a double shift at some point.
Especially with those players, he'll be dying to get over the board.
Just, to me, it's not only in optics, but if I'm playing against them... It's tough to shut down. Like, I watched, and I know Tampa lost, but that night against Toronto, they had no answer for that top line. Because
The thing of it is, if Tavares, forget about who's on the wing with Tavares and Marner.
Right.
If they're playing as well as they can.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even an issue. So I think the bigger issue is putting Matthews up there might light a fire under Tavares and Marner, but it might not. And if it doesn't, now you don't have a credible second line.
Yeah, exactly.
So the key here is that the captain and Mitch need to be a lot better.
Yeah.
In-game adjustments, though, he just is not... It's not his thing, man. Babcock is not interested in doing it. Like, Mikheyev is a perfect example. Doesn't have to be a three-day practice routine and then let the world know that that's where he's going up, and then he's got to talk to the media about it. Then Kapanen's got to deal with, why were you demoted? Why do you think it didn't work?
Right.
How about you get into the game and then you say, I'm going to shuffle a couple of things up? Every other coach seems to do that. Babcock's not a guy that believes in it.
Watching Boston, I remember Jake DeBrus struggling a little bit and then pushing him around the line. Right. Pasternak, they got him off that top line and pushed him down. Again, depth and strength down the middle can obviously, you know,
I'll be interested. If they leave Kapanen where he is with Marner and Tavares and they get Hyman back and Hyman goes in and Moore is still playing well on the third line, I'll be interested to see whether Kapanen would automatically go to the third line and displace Moore, or whether Mike might say, you started last year as a fourth liner and you finished really well, maybe you need to go back to the fourth line.
Yeah.
Be curious to see. And that's if Kapanen continues to struggle. But as for in-game adjustments, I'm making one. I got to go do a game.
Yeah.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Have a good one.
Go do your thing. Bob McKenzie going over to do the panel.
Exactly.
Yeah, Kapanen on...
doing show prep, by the way. That's why he didn't
Oh, I know.
Come back.
Yeah. Oh, he said in the break, he's like, well, why is Bob coming over here? I'm not coming back.
He's talking to Rene Fasel.
Yeah, I would like
his... Yeah, he's prepping for the World Juniors.
His show prep is second to none.
Kapanen with Jean Beliveau. I could see that happening.